This is Dottotech. I'm Steve Dotto, and welcome to Dottotech. I'm glad you're joining us today. Our show is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever it fits in your life. We've got a terrific show lined up today. I mean, really terrific. Why is it terrific? One of the reasons is we're announcing a fantastic new giveaway. We're going to be, well, should I tell you now or should I wait? I'll tell you now. We're giving away a Slingbox on the show coming up in about a month, but we're going to be starting that giveaway today. Greg Bowes from Keating Technologies, who are the distributor of the Slingbox here in Canada, he is going to be joining us and talking about the Slingbox that we're going to be giving away. Also, I have Mike Kozlowski on. Mike is from goodereader.com. We're going to be talking about the news in the ebook world. We've got Lila Pejman on. She is she's a social media guru, sort of. She deals with a lot of different social media issues. She's going to be talking to us about lots of the top news stories and what's happening in the world of tech. And, of course, Rick Yeager will be joining us, as will Theo Horstall. So we do have a terrific show lined up today. You know, when we're looking at the news, I guess the one thing that seems to be repeated over and over again is the fact that Ashton Kutcher, the actor, has been hired to play the role of Steve Jobs in the upcoming movie Jobs, and he's quite excited. Now, I'm kind of intrigued. I'm a lot of people are concerned about Kutcher playing the role and just how serious and how good an actor he is, and the fact Jobs was a very serious guy. But from what I understand, this movie is going to be focusing more on the earlier days of Jobs' life, his relationship with Steve Wozniak, the formation of Apple, and their early days as they were entrepreneurs growing this wonderful company, and kind of probably a little bit about the mistakes they made, because in those days they had some tremendous success and they had a few setbacks. So it should be interesting to see the portrayal by Ashton Kutcher in that role. I don't think, from what I understand at least, that the movie is going to be dealing with the later days, Jobs' return to Apple and his kind of triumphant return and the later years quite as much as the earlier time. Nevertheless, it should be a pretty interesting show as we move ahead. Joining me online now is Lila Pejman. Lila is a new media personality here in Vancouver. She's been on the show before. Kind of got your fingers in almost every pot in the new media world, don't you, Lila?
I try to. There's so much that happens. I feel like I still can't keep up.
Now, so you're going to give us a quick update of the world according to you. And the thing that you're most excited about is Ashton Kutcher.
Well, I don't know if I was excited about it, because when I heard... I just couldn't see it. And then that being said, when someone tweeted me back, because I was like, you know, Ashton Kutcher as playing Steve Jobs.
I guess we should have mentioned that. Ashton Kutcher is playing Steve Jobs.
Yeah. I was kind of like, whoa, that's quite a stretch, because I just can't take him too seriously. And Steve Jobs, you know, is a serious character.
Everything's serious. Yeah.
But nonetheless, if you do look at photos, of the young Steve Jobs, you do see a similarity between Ash. So I guess I could see it. I just couldn't take Ashton Kutcher that serious. But he is apparently growing his hair much longer now, just so that he's
starting to grow his hair out. Yeah,
yeah. Well, so that he can portray Steve Jobs in the right light. So
there's two movies being currently in production for that are kind of the life of the Steve Jobs, and the one that Ashton Kutcher is going to star in is just at this point called Jobs.
Right.
And now it's focusing, though, on the earlier life of Steve Jobs, his partnership with Steve Wozniak as they were young men, and, you know, the formation of Apple, the growth. And from what I've been reading, it's leading up to when they brought John Sculley on, that whole drama as he was luring John Sculley from Pepsi, through to the point when John Sculley then was, you know, kind of led the revolt within the board at Apple and ousted Steve Jobs. So we're talking kind of 1980s Steve Jobs, as opposed to the later Steve Jobs with the black turtleneck.
Yes, that's true. So maybe he had more of a personality back then, so therefore Ashton Kutcher could fill it perfectly.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, he went off to India and studied over there a little bit and got into philosophy a bit. So, you know, Steve Jobs was definitely a child of the 70s in the Silicon in California. So he had certainly a unique perspective on life and would have been a little bit of a, you know, he had his hippy dippy side.
That's true. And you know, I guess, you know, when I look at photos, Ashton does resemble the young Steve Jobs quite well. It's just, I think we have to mentally prepare ourselves to take Ashton Kutcher a bit seriously so we can actually enjoy the film. Have you read the Steve Jobs biography?
You know something? I'm so caught up in reading for my own school stuff right now. I haven't taken the time to read it. Mm-hmm. Have you read it?
I have. It was a very good read, and you'd be surprised how intense you find out about how intense his, Steve Jobs' personality is and how he didn't neglect his family.
Yes.
Because he was so career focused.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I do have some friends that work directly for him.
So
I've got some firsthand stories that would make your hair curl to a certain extent of just how driven and how focused he was. But
yes.
That was the, you know, it's the mercurial nature that he possessed. So, and Ashton Kutcher is, from what I understand, taking this incredibly seriously. And so it could end up being a good thing. It'll certainly be should be a good film to watch. And I think that was a fascinating time. That's my favorite time in the history of Apple was seeing the young entrepreneurs, you know, kind of making their mistakes. It's because it's all about the mistakes that they made back then, as opposed to the success that he had in his second iteration with Apple. You know, success is, that makes a good story, but the drama comes from all of the mistakes that were made.
That's true. That's
so,
true.
So now, are you a big Pinterest user?
You know what? I do like Pinterest a lot, but I have to control my urge to get on by not going on there regularly, because I can get so absorbed by all the imagery that's there. So I do kind of give myself a time limit on there, but I do. I'm a Pinterest user. I pin.
I haven't started, but I, as far as the leadership of the free world, I might be the only leader not left on Pinterest.
A lot of people have been signing up. Whether or not they're active is a different story, because everyone's heard the hype over Pinterest, but it's definitely gained a lot of popularity. So
what I'm talking about as far as the leadership goes is that Obama.
Oh, yeah. Well, then, yeah, we know that President Barack Obama actually has a Pinterest account, and he has something like Obama-inspired recipes, pet lovers for Obama, just the fact. So, I mean, he's getting into this social media network.
Now he should not have time.
How does he have time? Well,
he shouldn't. He should be too busy keeping us safe.
Well, he's trying to get the younger audience on board with them.
Okay. Now, what is it about Pinterest? Because
that's his thing, right? The reason why one of the main reasons why that helped his campaign from the beginning was his social media strategy. And so he's trying to maintain that and kind of be innovative in this space. As of right now, there's no Republican candidate that's on Pinterest. So, I mean, he's trying to encourage a different audience and hopefully get them to turn to become voters for him.
I don't think we've ever really talked a lot about Pinterest on the show. So, and I'm not a Pinterest user, so I'm still trying to get my head around what the hook is in Pinterest. As I look at the site, it just seems to be kind of like my Facebook feed, but much more dense. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, it's a place to organize and share images that you like or you're inspired by. And so Pinterest is, you know, everyone has, you know, they organize their favorite images by creating a certain board. So I have a board that says, you know, my favorite quotes. I have a board that is like dresses I love. Furniture I love is another board that I have. Cars that I like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that it helps me organize the images that I see in my feed. So then I select the certain followers that I like and have good images to share. And then from that, that's where I find those images and I repin it, or I'll upload my own personal images and put it onto specific boards and in hopes that maybe my followers will repin that. And that's how the images get circulated.
Mm-hmm. And so they work their way around, but it seems to be very craft and food oriented as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you see a lot. I see a lot of home decor. It really depends on your preference though.
Okay.
I do hear, I mean, there's a lot of do-it-yourself. I see that a lot. I've been seeing a lot of home decor and shoes.
Oh, yeah. I see some Uggs here. Okay.
Oh, no, no, not Uggs.
No, sheepskin cuff lug Uggs. So they look hideous. Yeah, sorry. I wouldn't wear them. But I'm not that kind of guy.
Uggs are just comfy, but I see a lot of shoes that are like, you know, stiletto style or stiletto types.
Okay.
But yeah, and I mean, it's been very popular among women, but because, I mean, like, the quotes, the stats that I have are like out in October, from last October, and about 70% of Pinterest users are female, but things have shifted ever since then. There was all of a sudden a surge of men trying Pinterest out, and now more brands are going up there and using this social media tool. It seems like this Pinterest became like an overnight success, but the developers and the people behind Pinterest have been working on this for just over 2 years. I found this interesting, but do you use Dropbox?
I do use Dropbox a lot, and I'm using it a lot more now because it's the best way for communicating content through to your iPad.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And a lot of musicians use it. And one musician by the name of YouTube, or the band YouTube, both Bono and
YouTube.
The
YouTube.
Did I say YouTube?
You said YouTube. that's okay. I've called him Bono before. So that's not as egregious.
Huh?
So I've called him Bono instead of Bono, so it's not as egregious as saying YouTube, which is an easier slip.
Oh, that's funny. Oh my gosh, it's too early for me. I need my cup of coffee. But nonetheless, Bono and The Edge, they're actually investors of Dropbox now. So they've just recently been announced. And because I guess what happened, a lot of musicians use Dropbox because, you know, not all everyone who produces a song are actually in one city or one room, so they'll use Dropbox to kind of
move files back and forth, to share files. Yeah.
And so it's quite interesting to see Bono a part of this, because he's also the co-founder and managing partner in Elevations Partners.
Yeah.
And this company has put money into Facebook and Yelp, and they're currently trying to raise a new $1 billion fund. So, you know, you'll see a lot of Bono investing in technology startups, which is quite cool, but it's starting to become, it's definitely becoming a trend. Ashton Kutcher from the get-go has been an investor in technology startups like Foursquare, for example. And so he kind of, I think, started that popularity. I just found out that Rachel Zoe, the famous celebrity stylist, has been an investor for a fashion application called Pose. Selena Gomez invested something like $250,000 for a postcard making app. So, celebrities are trying to get into the space, and same with Justin Timberlake. He also invested in MySpace.
Yes.
Whether or not he's going to bring the sexy back to MySpace, that's another story.
But, I don't know if anybody can. Yeah.
I know.
It's an interesting, way to leverage their brand, because Bono investing in, Bono investing in Dropbox adds to the value of Dropbox just by attaching his name, because so many people follow him. And his name just catches media attention. So when they do invest, they bring equity other than just the cash. They bring also the visibility.
For sure. For sure.
And that's really what it's all about as far as social media is concerned.
I know. And you're right. It does help with the popularity. But I mean, I've been noticing a lot of e-commerce sites lately use not A-list actresses, but like kind of a B or C actress, thinking that they would bring this level of popularity to their site. And and I personally don't buy it, but maybe there is a market that, you know, is heavily influenced by these B-list actresses. So it's one of those things where with startups, I think Dropbox has been very consistent in their business model. So I'm not saying that.
Well, Apple should have bought it. Apple should have bought it and should have made it their cloud app.
That would have been. But you wonder if they have, you know, they've had offered Dropbox any money, and whether or not they actually wanted to take that route and be acquired. That would have been that would have been great. But I don't always believe that the celebrities really make a difference. I mean, they might bring attention to it, but it all comes down to the execution, and it's very important that if a celebrity does invest into a company, that company has a solid group of people behind that startup.
Well, it sounds like that investment group is pretty savvy in a lot of ways. It's not just Bono. It's a whole bunch of other people that are, you know, they're a fund, and he's just one of the members, and they have other people that are evaluating the investments, etc. Let's wrap things up with talking about Instagram. Are you a big Instagram user?
Yes. I love it. I'm on the iPhone, and they just launched it for the
Android,
isn't that great? I mean, people have been waiting a long time for this. Like, we're looking at like 16 months, or no, 17 months, mm-hmm. For it to be available on the Android. 30 million registered users on the iOS app alone.
That's fantastic. Now, now for people that don't know, Instagram is a photo uploading app that automatically takes your pictures and then publishes them into a stream where you can put them in a variety of different areas. So it's a nice instantaneous social media app, which has been glaring in its omission from the Android OS. And that's so the popularity of it as it launched is it's not surprising, but it's still pretty impressive.
It's pretty impressive how Instagram has gained so much popularity, but they do have serious competitors. Like Path is doing something very similar. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. I mean, I still use Instagram, and I've been using it for quite some time. It's Twitter for pictures only. And I get a lot of inspiration from just launching the Instagram app and just kind of seeing what my friends are uploading.
Yeah. Layla Pejman is, her site is the Pej Dispensary. So the easiest way to find you online is thepej.com, right?
Yeah. Thepej.com and at thepej on Twitter.
Okay. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Greg Bowes is joining me from the Center of the Universe, Toronto, Ontario. Greg is a national channel manager for Keating Technologies, who are a distributor of many things digital. Thanks for coming on today, Greg.
Nice to be here with you, Steve. Thanks for having us on to talk about Slingbox.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about Slingbox. And first of all, we have to thank you because this is the first announcement. We're going to be giving a Slingbox away over the next month on the show. So this is great timing. So I have not set up the Slingbox in... I'm thinking it's maybe 6 or 7 years ago that when we were doing the TV show, we set one up, and it wasn't easy. It was a challenge, but things have improved. Tell me things have improved.
Yes, Steve, things have improved.
A lot?
Yes. Yeah, it's an easy experience. It is going to take you about 10, 15 minutes to, you know, get your sling box set up. Because your sling box generally gets placed within your home theater system, mm-hmm. and that means that you may have to, you know, pull it out, you know, blow off the dust bunnies.
Yeah, take the home theater system part. So sling box, it essentially still does the same thing, which is delivers our own home cable or television signal or feed to us on our digital devices, but it allows us to do that over the internet as well as just within the home, right?
Correct. It gives you that capability to watch your live or recorded on your devices.
Oh, I can record. Can I use it? Does it interface with my PVR in that way? That's one thing I was wondering about. Will I actually be able to access my PVR or just the ongoing feed?
Yes, both. So. The sling box, once it's connected on your system, will be able to do 100% of what your, say, Rogers or Bell TV remote control can do for you.
Get out of town. Really?
Yep.
No, I thought I was going to get the live feed, but I didn't realize I could actually go in and do things that were PVR related as well. So I can record shows, I can play them back, I can erase them, delete them, and all that sort of. And is that actually on the Slingbox itself, or am I doing that on my PVR?
You're still using your existing equipment 100%. The Slingbox is simply facilitating all of it.
Oh, good. So I can go and erase I can erase shows that I don't want the kids to watch.
Yes, you can.
Awesome.
That's right. So now, yeah, the Slingbox gives you that ability to enjoy your, you know, you're already paying for that content at home. Mm-hmm. And this gives you the ability to enjoy that TV content anywhere you go, wherever you are, and, you know, simply if you've got internet connection.
Okay, so the way that it's going to connect is I'm going to be taking this Slingbox, I'm going to plug it in my home theater, and then it plugs in, the Slingbox itself plugs directly into my PVR, right?
Yes, that's correct. There are, in the back of your content box, there will be output jacks that will go into the input jacks on the Slingbox, and the secret ingredient that makes it all work so well is the IR blaster that comes with every Slingbox, because okay. The IR blaster controls the AV device. No matter what device that happens to be, whether it's a set-top box, a satellite receiver, or a Blu-ray player, okay, they're all AV devices.
It's using the same infrared technology that my remote control is.
That's correct.
So does it have to sit in front of my PVR so that it can see that infrared signal? How does that work?
Yeah, the Slingbox is part of your home theater system. It becomes like part of that area, but it doesn't. It isn't obstructing anything. It's
okay.
The little IR blaster basically is pointed at the IR eye in your set-top box, and you hardly even notice that it's there.
So, but I physically have to locate it so that the IR blaster points towards that.
Yes, you would. Yeah.
Okay, so it should go in front of. Somehow, it has to go in front of the PVR.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I think I can set that up without too much trouble. And then, the next part of the magic is actually connecting the Slingbox to my router so that I can gain internet access as well, right?
Correct. We require a hard Cat5 connection to the router because that's what gives you the highest quality of signal is when you've got a hardwire connection to the router. So we have a Cat5 connection in the back of the Slingbox, and it's looking for one of the Cat5 ports in the back of the router.
So this isn't something that we're going to set up Wi-Fi. We're going to make sure we have it hardwired into the router. That's a key.
That's a key, yes.
Okay, I understand that. That certainly makes sense. So once we've got that done, is it just installing software on your computer?
Well, Slingbox really, to speak about that difference in the Slingbox today from the Slingbox you first saw 5-6 years ago, yes, the Slingbox basically takes over from that point. It sees that you're installing it for the first time, and it basically steps you through the sequence of the next steps. There's a bit of a test procedure that takes place, but all in all, it's within 10 to 15 minutes you should be in and out from the theater with Slingbox provisioned and ready to go so that you can begin enjoying it on your computer, your laptop computer, your desktop computer. Should you want to use it on your tablet or smart phone, then there is an app that you would need to provide yourself with from the app store of that device.
So that's for Android or iOS. And those apps are not free. They're not included with the Slingbox. They're something that we have to buy extra.
They are extra. They're $29.99 extra on those app stores, yes.
But that will then allow me to, say, watch any of my TV on my iPad or my iPhone or my Android device.
That's correct.
Now, of course, the magic for this is going to be hockey season, right? I mean, the whole reason Slingbox is in Canada, I'm sure, is so people can watch their hockey games when they're out of their market.
Oh, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Just because I'm a Leaf fan and in Toronto and you're in Vancouver,
yeah,
thanks
think,
a
yeah.
lot. Steve.
I win right now, don't I? my son's going to university out at Laurier, and Sportsnet doesn't carry a lot of the Canuck games out there because they, you know, it's all Leafs all the time out there. So
right.
So he's quite looking forward to having this set up. It won't be as bad in the playoffs because all of those games are certainly broadcast, but he misses out on the Canucks a lot and has to have a steady diet of the Leafs. So I think he's looking forward to this.
Well, that's a perfect application you've just mentioned there. Is that he's at Laurier back this way, and he's going to want to be able to see the Canucks game by simply, you know, choosing that app off his tablet, and mm-hmm. it will go right into and activate the set-top box. If the set-top box is turned off, let's say you happen to be out that night or asleep, he can turn the set-top box on. It does not turn the TV on because it's simply looking for the TV content.
Now,
and he can switch the channel to the Leaf game and go ahead and watch, or sorry, the Canucks game and go ahead and watch it.
Now, the one question that I have then is the tuner, is it using the, it's using the PVR's tuner. So if I've got a dual tuner in my PVR, which most PVRs do, he can't watch, if we're recording one thing and watching a different channel, well, he won't be able to watch any except something except for what we're recording or watching, right?
Right. Okay. I mean, he can change the channels, Steve. He can change the channels, but it would be like having two remote controls on the same coffee table.
Yes. So as long as I'm watching the hockey game, he's going to be fine. But if somebody's watching something else and the hockey game isn't on one of those tuners because something else is being recorded, he could be out of luck on that particular tuner.
Right. And let me just go and say that there are two Slingbox models that we offer. There is, if I can quickly describe them.
Sure.
The Solo gives you a single AV connection.
Okay.
Now, that Solo would connect up to your Rogers set-top box or your Bell TV box, and it does not have a coax connection, so okay. It simply is controlling the digital side of the set-top box or AV device. And it's only a single AV connection and a single IR blaster.
Got it.
The Pro HD, which is the...
which is what I have.
That's the one you have? Okay.
Yes.
That one is capable of connecting three AV devices to it. Plus, it has a coax connector in it. So, in respect to your question about your son, if you have the Pro HD connected up to the set-top box and the coax connection connected up, then he could, from wherever he is in the world, select to go over to the coax connection while you're watching Dancing with the Stars or whatever.
That's not going to happen. I will be watching the hockey game, but somebody else might not be. But that is great. So I can actually then plug the actual cable signal into the, and I don't even have to at that point have it pointed at the PVR unless I want to watch the recorded content.
Right.
That's the way I'm going to go. I'm just going to plug it into the coax. It doesn't even need to be near my PVR then.
Hmm. Yeah, you can do all of those things. Plus, you could additionally connect it up to a DVD player or a Blu-ray player, and you could equally, from wherever you are in the world, control and watch that content as well with the Pro HD.
What's the price delta between the two?
You're talking $199 for the Solo and $319 for the Pro HD, so it's about $100 price difference.
Got it. Excellent. Well, we're going to talk about this again after I've set it up, and if I have any other questions, will you agree to come back on about halfway through the giveaway, and I'll help me with any questions I have?
Of course, I will, and certainly, I think you'll find the install to be very user friendly, easy to work with.
Well, I'm hoping it is, because last time I pulled my hair out. The problem was we had to assign ports and all that stuff last time, and it sounds like we've gotten way beyond all of that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking it's going to be a lot easier this time.
It will be. Yeah, I guarantee you.
Thanks so much. Greg Bowes is a product manager there at Keating Technologies. Thanks for your time. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
As we mentioned there, we have a Slingbox to be giving away, so a reminder to drop by our website at dottotech.com. There you can enter to be the recipient of your brand new Slingbox. I think that's going to be a terrific prize. I'm going to be setting mine up over the next week, and so the next week when we come on the show, I will tell you how it is, how it's working, and how easy it is, if indeed Greg is accurate, which I have no reason to believe that he's not. It certainly looks like it's going to be a lot easier process. It's a terrific prize. It's at the website, and of course, there's so much more to do at the website as well. You can listen to previous podcasts of the show. You can enter your opinion in our polls. We're asking right now what you think of the whole idea behind having to upgrade to Facebook's timeline. Certainly interested in your opinion on that at dottotech.com. Joining me now, Mike Kozlowski, who is, of course, the editor of GoodEReader.com, the main source for us for all things e-news, e-book worthy. Hey, Mike, tell me about what's going on with the Harry Potter franchise. Finally, after all this time, they are available in ebook form.
Yeah, it's been a long time in coming.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling, the author, was very resistant to doing ebooks for many, many, many years, mainly because she wanted a little bit more control than most authors can exert over companies like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So she launched her own site, and she's selling the books on her site now.
Yeah, so the site is Pottermore. It's been in beta for quite some time. My youngest daughter is very excited. She's been a beta user of Pottermore for quite some time. But what always surprised me about the Potter franchise is that it was the books have been available for a long time in ebook format. They've actually had, audiobook format. There's actually been several different readers, Stephen Fry and one other gentleman whose name escapes me. So there's been two actual full editions recorded as audiobooks, which are selling very well and are very expensive. But she resisted the ebooks for so long, and it seemed glaring to me.
Yeah, totally. It was one of the largest book franchises pretty well of about the last 15 years. You know, mm-hmm. kids grew up watching the movies, reading the books. So it's one of those huge things that are generation defining. And I found it very, very odd that pretty well, if you wanted to get it in digital form, you were forced to pirate the books because there was just simply no alternative to do it. Now that they're available, the price point is very respectable. You're not really paying too much.
The prices are excellent.
And you also get a discount if you want to buy the entire set. I think it's about by 10, maybe 15%.
Well, the pricing. Well, and this is the thing that's kind of going to be interesting is the amount of clout that's being exercised by J.K. Rowling in this whole thing is that we're finding the major book resellers linking back to the Pottermore site for the sales. So they're just getting a small piece of the action. It's completely changed the relationship between publisher and distributor, I think, certainly in the ebook publishing area. She's only charging like $8 per copy for the first for the earlier books, and then $11 or $12 for the later books. The whole set's $61 for all seven books. That's under $10 a book.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to buy them in hardcover format, in tangible format, you'd be spending way more than that.
And it's interesting how she's concerned. You said that she might have been concerned about piracy and stuff, but it's got one of the strangest licensing agreements I've ever seen. You're allowed to use the books on 8 devices, share them with your kids, as long as your kids are under the age of 19. It's like there's an honor system that she's putting in place.
Yeah, one of the things that she's done that's been pretty innovative was doing watermarks on books. So, Steve, if you purchase the digital Potter books, it'll actually have a little watermark that's very opaque, so it's not too noticeable. It doesn't take away from the reading experience, but it does mention your name, and it does have underneath the code a bunch of information about you. So if you decide to upload these books to, say, BitTorrent sites or file sharing sites, it could end up coming and biting you in the butt.
Okay, because your name is actually attached to the book itself. They're all inscribed, sort of, each page.
Yeah.
And well, that's a good way of doing it.
I really think that that's probably almost the future of, you know, books that have digital rights management. Because let's face it, if you buy a book and you want to transfer it to your tablet or e-reader, it's this convoluted process of using Adobe Digital Editions, transferring it to your computer, then transferring it to your e-reader. And a lot of people just find difficulties doing that, where if it comes down to as being as easy as just copying and pasting it to your device, a lot of people would find that process easier. And I bet you that more people would be getting into ebooks, e-readers, tablets, and actually reading because the process is simpler. And having a little bit of a watermark for your security, I like that because it puts the onus on an individual rather than just someone breaking an encryption and no track record.
Well, and if they make it easier to move the file around because it's watermarked, as opposed to making it more difficult to move the file around as another method of doing security, it's just going to make it more accessible and easier for us to use, which is a big issue.
I think so too, and going forward, I really am really interested to sort of see the fallout of all these big companies like Kobo, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon sort of linking to an exterior site yes. instead of carrying the book on their own, because that's really the first time that I'm aware that this has ever happened, and it only took a superstar and a billion-dollar franchise to make it happen.
Well, and that's the thing, is the other franchises that we've seen are, you know, in that race to money. So already the Hunger Games, that's all available in digital editions already and all those sorts of things. So they're already in the mix. It'll be interesting to see what the next, you know, who withholds from that till they have a little bit more control, till they have a little more clout so they can do the same sort of thing. Because obviously it's going to make a substantial difference in the amount of revenue into J.K. Rowling and her enterprise.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if you look at Suzanne Collins and the Hunger Games, I think it only got that popular because as soon as the hardcover book came out, the ebook came out. And mm-hmm. so there was this parallel process of growing the franchise because just all of her books were accessible on every major platform, iBooks on the iPad, you know, the Kindle, the Kobo, all those. And then if you wanted to go to the bookstore, it's pretty simple to just go and buy all three books now for, you know, literally like $12 to $15. Yeah. So her franchise grew just because of the digital accessibility of them. And I don't really know if there's really any authors out there that have, you know, this existing franchise that has not gravitated towards books yet.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is. So it certainly makes it interesting. And maybe the Potter franchise will always be the exception. It certainly is the biggest success of our generation.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk a little bit about the difference that the new iPad is making in the ebook market. I made a mistake and visited London Drugs the other day and looked at the new iPad and was just smitten with the quality of the screen. And as for reading ebooks, it must make it just that much better. So I'm thinking the new iPad is probably kind of getting there as far as being, I've never loved it as an ebook reader. I think I might accept it a lot better as an ebook reader with the current iteration.
Yeah, I really think that reading ebooks and magazines is really what makes the new iPad excel. Don't forget, the iPad just came out and there really isn't a lot of games and applications that have been built from the ground up to support the higher resolution. In some cases, they've just put a few new textures on it to really say, okay, this is a high resolution game. But what really excited me being into the whole e-reading and ebook scene was Kobo, Amazon, and a lot of other companies have updated their iPad apps to give you retina style display on the text on the main graphical user interface. So when you boot up the app and you see your library shelf and all that sort of stuff, and even book cover art looks amazing now. And when you turn pages, the page turn speeds are faster due to the graphics processor, and it becomes almost this visceral experience now, which it really impresses me.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. I'm gonna let you go because I know you got a whole bunch of things on your plate. But thanks for the update on Pottermore and the new iPad, and for all things ebook related. GoodEReader.com is the site. Mike Kozlowski is our expert. Thanks for your time, Mike.
No problem.
Theo Horsdahl from London Drugs joins me now. How are you doing, Theo?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You're heading off on a big junket over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I go to Hong Kong for about 10 days.
Wow. Now, you go there on a regular basis, don't you?
You know, it's actually my first time overseas. Most of the time I've been domestic, the U.S. a lot.
Oh, okay.
This is my first time overseas to Asia, so I'm excited.
So meeting with the suppliers and getting a peek at what's coming down the pipe?
Yep, a few shows and talking to suppliers. Absolutely, yeah, it'll be productive.
Well, I've only been to Hong Kong once in my life, but it was a while. I actually landed in the old airport where you landed in the middle of the city, and like people's laundry ended up on your wingtips. It was one of the memorable landings that you could have, I think, in the world at the time. Lots of old movies have great shots of the planes landing there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this new mic that you're using, because we're doing a podcast and we're just recording things, and you guys are carrying a line of mics from a company called Blue microphones.
Yeah, Blue. So the traditional computer mic is, you know, it could either be a desktop mic or a headset with a boom mic attachment, and for the most part that's suitable for, you know, things like audio calling. As you know, as quality gets better and better, you now as you illustrated in this recording, we're doing this over the internet, recording with over the counter products. At least I am. So
yeah,
Yeah, absolutely. So this in this particular case, what I'm using is something by Blue called the Yeti. And what it is it looks very much like a traditional professional quality recording mic. I mean, it's easily, about a foot. So it stands up very high. But the nice thing about it is that it has very high quality audio, as I'm sort of demonstrating now. And not only that, is it allows you to do a bunch of different scenarios, such as right now I'm using a unidirectional for podcasting or interviews like this. But you can certainly use it for in a setting where if you had a conference call over Skype or whatever, you can set it up as an omnidirectional to pick up multiple spots in the room. It's very high quality.
And it is this big step ahead as far as the quality goes, especially with the little pin microphones that are built into the bezel of notebook computers and stuff, which are quite tinny. This gives you really good quality. Now, this is the USB-only version that you have, correct?
This is. So this is literally a plug-and-play. You plug it into any USB port on a PC or a Mac. And in the case of Skype, which I'm using right now, is it automatically picks it up and says, you have a Blue Yeti mic. Do you want to start using it? And you say yes, and you're good to go.
And you have some basic volume and gain controls on the mic itself?
Yeah, you have a volume control. You have a mute button, which is pretty important, you want to cough or whatever else. But you also have the, as I mentioned before, you have the ability to change how the mic picks up the source. So as I mentioned before, I'm sitting right in front of the mic, so it's set up to only pick up what's directly in front of the mic in the best quality. I can flick a switch on the back, and that'll turn it into either a bidirectional. So in the case of if I was having an interview with one of my colleagues and we were both talking, he'd be sitting across the desk from me and would pick up the bidirectional, or you can set up to omnidirectional, which is picking up every spot in the room. So if you had a gaggle of people, I guess you could say, doing an interview, absolutely, or a conference call.
Now, this makes a huge difference in doing any sort of conference work, but it's also great if you're doing videos and you're doing voiceovers yourself, or you're doing presentations that you're recording yourself. The quality and the depth of sound that you're going to get on your local system is so much better, and it sounds to most ears as good as you can really expect to get.
Well, things like Apple made coined the term podcasting many years ago, but they have other software, and there's lots of different software out there. But to use an example that ships with every Mac is something called GarageBand. So mm-hmm. you could do your own audio recording, make your own podcast, make your own shows, or even just do audio notes, even record instruments.
This is great for music. So, yeah,
or vocals, do voice, do tracks in GarageBand, as I mentioned before, and literally make your own song with an instrument and an audio and vocals. It's suitable to do all that stuff. And when you're done with it, you just unplug it from your USB port and put it back on the shelf.
Now, this company, Blue, has really taken on the challenge. There was really, I guess, in the kind of the computer world, there are a few makers that made video conferencing type microphones and cameras. Logitech would be one, and there's some gaming centric headsets that have it. And Samson, the professional audio maker, they made a few tools. They made a few podcasting mics, but Blue has really taken it to a new level. They've got a complete range from kind of lower end professional all the way through into the consumer space. They've got the same mic you have, but they also have an XLR version which will allow it to plug into pro audio systems.
Yeah, so and the one I'm using, the Yeti, as I mentioned, it's very reasonable. It's about $179.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, the Pro version that has a few more higher end settings is $319. But for those who just want to do casual recording, still high quality, but things like if you were only using it for, let's say, calls to loved ones or whatever, you can get something even a lower end called the Snowball Ice, which is a $75 mic. So they have as you mentioned, they have a good range of products, but they are focused on the audio and mic recording segment that connect to your computer.
Yeah, so the company is Blue. I think that when people try it out, when they spend a little bit of time playing with it, and if then take and edit your audio file and play with it, certainly GarageBand is a great way to go on the Mac. There's a free audio utility that if you want to do a little bit more work called Audacity that you could download and play with it. But there's a lot of satisfaction out of playing around with audio and trying to find ways to incorporate it in different areas of your life. And a good microphone, absolutely essential in that process.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this, and even talking to loved ones, I mean, I can use, as I was mentioning before, I can use Skype to talk to people halfway around the world. And instead of having to deal with kind of low quality audio, the webcams are decent enough, but now you can actually, it feels like you're in the same room as we feel like right now.
And even if you upgrade to the video camera, if you're using a video camera on your computer, still using this as the audio interface. It gives you a lot better quality. And I don't know about you, but I find that now, as far as my business communication goes, I'm spending probably 50% of the time in Skype.
And I would say my preference over picking up the phone would be using Skype or similar voice over IP technology, because you get to use your computer, you get to use your speakers or headset, and the audio quality is so much better.
And you can, and the other thing is, as you start to use it more, you immediately have an interface for sharing files. If I'm talking to you about the, you know, this great Blue Microphone site, I can just copy the URL, send it to you as a message right within the Skype window, which allows us to communicate or even share screenshots with you or share your desktop, your computer desktop. So it gives you an awful lot more functionality as far as communicating using some different mediums at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and last of all, the nicest function of all for me is, you know, I'm a geek and I like to play with toys. It's the ultimate toy, but it is productive and it has a real world application such as we're using right now.
Yeti is the mic. Blue is the company. Theo Horsdal is my guest from London Drugs. Theo, safe travels and we'll talk to you when you get back.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
It is time for our Mac Tech feature. Rick Yeager is my Mac guru. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm very good. How's it going over in Steve Dottoland?
Steve Dottoland is doing just fine. You're going to talk to me about security today.
I am. I'm going to start by talking about passwords because, I mean, for most of us, that's our first line of defense is that password. And I got to say, well, I use a program called 1Password.
Mm-hmm.
It is nearly $50 in the App Store.
Yeah, it's a really expensive app.
It's an expensive app, but I don't worry about passwords. And to be honest, most people don't worry about passwords, but they should.
Mm-hmm.
They use the same password for everything, and it's usually,
or they store their passwords in their address book or just in an open text file on their desktop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think most people are using that same password for everything. It's their dog's name and then 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes. Well, if it's that sophisticated.
Yeah. And if I just guessed your password, then, you know.
Yeah, there's always a top 10 list out every year of passwords, and, you know, password is number one, and then, you know, just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is number two, and it's ridiculous how easy they are to or how, you know, how low the security is on them. Okay, but okay, 1Password, it's a utility that installs on my devices. I have to buy a separate version of it for each of my devices.
Correct. Well, you have to buy it for your Mac, which
yes.
is what I'm talking about today. It does have an iPhone app, or which is $9.99.
Okay.
The iPad app is actually a universal app.
Okay.
So if you get the iPad app, you get the iPhone app.
Okay.
And that is $14.99. And okay. if you have an iPad and an iPhone, get 1Password Pro.
Okay.
From
it's $14. So you can spend about $75 to get all of your devices if you're in the Apple world. By the way, this is also good information for all of our Windows users because they have Windows versions as well as Android versions of this application. So convince me that a password utility is worth $50 because Apple includes Keychain in my Mac.
Right. But okay, here's the scenario I bring up, especially with people that use the same password for everything. It isn't so much that you can remember that password. That's the minor point of what it offers. The major point is that if I find out what your 1Password is, that one that you use for everything, and I find that you're using it for email, then I can go to the bank that you use, go online and say, oops, I forgot my password. What is it? Why don't you email it to me? And then I can go to your email account, get the new password, and go into your bank.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can lock you out of your banking information.
Yeah.
And that becomes the gateway to me taking over your identity.
Full identity theft. Okay. So it's a dire consequences.
Yeah.
How does this one application solve that for us?
It solves it by playing to the weakness that creates the problem. You can only remember one password is the problem for humanity. We can only seem to keep one of these in our heads. So what it does is it creates a database of rock-solid military-grade encrypted passwords. And then to open that database, you just need that one password, the one that you can remember. It then installs a plugin on virtually every browser. I haven't found one yet that it doesn't work with. And there's a little button on your browser so that I go to Twitter on Safari and it asks me to log in. I go to the little P icon at the top there and it shows my Twitter account. And I hit that account and it plugs in my username and my password and logs me in. And it can save multiple accounts.
So different users of the computer can have different.
Well, different Twitter accounts. So if I have, and I do, I manage several Twitter accounts, and you can get pretty confused with Keychain.
I often do get confused with Keychain.
And this kind of simplifies that because at the moment you set that password for the first time, this little bar drops down and says, would you like to save this in 1Password's database? And it offers you a title, and you should then customize that title for the password to something that really is meaningful to you, to let you know that it's not just Twitter.com, it's Twitter.com this user account.
Okay. So it's flexible as far as the accounts go. Obviously, your notebook has to be secure at that point. Can't, because you do have still, the keys are available to your entire life if somebody gets your 1Password account.
True enough, yes.
And that's where one of the dangers lies, the fact that it all lies there. I guess that's one concern, but you
have to know that 1Password to get in there, though.
Yes.
Even if you have my laptop, you can launch 1Password and it'll ask you for that 1Password again. If you don't know it, it's not giving you anything.
Okay. And so you can make that a good robust password and you're probably in good shape. Yeah. Now, here's where they kind of get you though, because you then need to get it for all of your other devices. Because if I have my Twitter password and because basically 1Password will auto generate these military grade codes, right? Passwords.
Correct. They're, yeah.
It's not fluffy 123. It's ampersand equals 11ABJ, this sort of stuff, right?
Yes.
So you're never going to remember these passwords. That as you go into each of your different accounts, you'll have to do a change password in order to set the military grade passwords, right?
Correct.
So once you've changed the password, then you still need to access those accounts on your phone, on your iPad. You either have to get 1Password on those devices or you have to find a way to remember those passwords.
Yeah, you have to sit in front of your computer and just manually enter those babies in there.
So basically, you're going to buy this as an ecosystem, as a password ecosystem for all of your devices.
This is probably purchased, like the whole, like you say, the 1Password ecosystem is probably purchased by people that have had their identities wiped.
Well, I can just see how useful it is, because I can't tell you how many times I go to jump into a site that I haven't been to for a while and I've forgotten the password. And I've got variations. At least I do that much, but it's still, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a little dear. I do think it's a little bit expensive. Mm-hmm. I'd sure like to see this product at, $19 or $29, but at, $50, I think $50 people really stop and think before they spend that much money on the App Store. And that's the challenge. On the Apple App Store, it's not such a big deal, $50, I guess. And it's only $14 on the mobility stores, or $9.95, so it's not quite as bad. But still, it's a good chunk of change. But I think, I think I got to give it a thumbs up, too. I think it's a product that I think people really should be getting. And you're not the first person that's mentioned it to me. I just haven't drunk the Kool-Aid yet myself.
Okay,
what's next?
Next one is Sophos Antivirus.
Okay.
Which, the day will come. The day will come. And the Macs will get a virus. This one's free. It's as good as any other antivirus I've ever tried. It runs in the background, and just there was a Trojan horse that was going around about this time last year that made its way through the office where I worked. And Sophos Antivirus really saved our bacon there by kicking it out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a free antivirus app for Mac.
We've had a free run in the Apple world for a long time, and as you say, the viruses are coming. And the issue for me with all antivirus software is its risk versus reward, and you know, things like Symantec's antivirus software on Windows, occasional releases of it have been such resource pigs.
Mm-hmm.
That they've taken a computer that runs perfectly fine and turned it into an absolute slug, and that's my concern always. Is what's my risk versus my reward of you know, if I've got a computer that's running at half the speed, my productivity's dropped in half.
Yeah. And for the viruses that aren't out there yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of tough to know. It's like the polar bear detector. No, it's the polar bear repellent. And
yeah.
You know,
yeah, you don't know if it works.
you don't know if it works unless you go somewhere where there's polar bears, and there aren't any viruses, and so I can't tell whether it's definitely not bogging down my system, but it might not be bogging down my system because it's not doing anything.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, it's a good one to know. But Sophos antivirus for the Mac.
Antivirus.
What's next?
Watts. And
Watts.
That's WATTS.
Okay.
And this is one I discovered about a year ago when my MacBook Pro battery met its untimely demise. It died way too young.
Oh.
And it died because of, well, a manufacturer's defect, but my suspicion was that it was because I kept my laptop plugged in all the time.
Yes.
And that is actually bad for the battery.
Yeah,
and
you want it to drain, completely drain from time to time.
Exactly. And that's what Watts does. It kind of puts you on a schedule and lets you know, hey, you know, it's been a while since you drained that battery. Why don't you unplug that baby? And it gets you to unplug it. It gets you to drain the battery right down, lets you know when you're close to draining it, save your work. And then it tells you, okay, the computer's about to go night-night. Just leave it alone for a few hours. Just drain that thing. And then when it brings it back up, it keeps track of how many cycles you've recharged, and keeps kind of a journal of the life of your battery. It's
because they are good for just a certain number of charges. And knowing how many times the battery's been charged gives you the ability to predict when the battery is going to require replacing, so you can start planning for it.
Exactly. And I took my computer to Mac Station, where they have, at last count, I think there were three guys named Jeremy there, and one of them, I can't remember which, ran a test on my MacBook Pro, and it was he determined that it had died before its time and was able to send out for a new one for me.
Oh, good. So you got it under warranty. So that's nice.
I did. So that's something to keep in mind as well. If your battery doesn't hold a charge very well, and your MacBook Pro or whatever device it is fairly new, don't be afraid to take it into like Mac Station or your Apple Store or wherever.
You should be getting a full day's work out of a notebook these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to take them in and get them checked out.
I like
out.
That one. Watts. It's $5, $6, $7,
$6.95. Yeah, $6.99 from $6.99 the App Store.
At the App Store. I think that is a good utility. Okay, your batting average is pretty high today, Rick.
Well, let's see. Let's see how I do on the next one. CrashPlan.
Okay.
This isn't so much an application. Well, it is an application, but it's an online backup service. Mm. There's a few of them out there. I'm sure you've got your favorites, but this is the one I've tested over the past year. And for $1.50 a month per computer, you can get 10 gigabytes, which these days is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
$3 a month per computer, you get unlimited.
Okay,
so it's kind of the super big gulp kind of pricing plan for $1.50 more, you can have unlimited. So why not do that?
So it's streaming online backup. It's basically taking all of your data from your computer, all of your files, everything that you need, your photos, your music, and it's backing it up into the cloud.
And just to have that added security of, well, what happens if the other backup utilities will back up to an external hard drive, but if your mm-hmm. house burns down, it's your backup and your computer are both gone. So
it's part two of an effective backup plan. Back up to your computer regularly or to a hard drive, and then have everything backing up to the web and find a good web-based service for that. So this exactly. So this sounds like another. Now, does this one doesn't have the friend the there's a few fairly popular ones, SugarSync, iDrive, there's a Carbonite. There's a few different services like this out there, and I don't know that we can actually actively endorse one over the other, saying that one is, we know for sure, is way better. This one certainly seems to be very cost effective at $3 unlimited per device. That sounds to me like pretty good money. Most of the other services are a little bit more, but the other services have one nice feature, which is a social aspect. For instance, with SugarSync, if you get other people to sign up, then they give you more megabytes of storage with every person that you refer. So you can build up to enough storage just out of referrals without ever having to pay if you're a very social person. So there's some other opportunities there that make it into a bit of a game, but really backup shouldn't be a game. It should just be something you should do. So Crash Right. Plan might well be a good idea.
And like the antivirus, one of the big questions is how does it affect your computer's performance when it's doing that backup, and is it sensitive to your work schedule and mm-hmm. gets yeah. out of the way when you're busy?
Well, I'm anticipating that you can schedule it to do it at nighttime or downtime on the computer.
Yes, you can schedule it, but you can also tell it to wait 15 minutes after my last activity.
Oh, okay. So it's like a sleep, almost like a sleep thing. Good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Crash Plan. Excellent. Is that it?
That's it.
So with that, I need to thank you very much, Rick, and to all the rest of our guests for making today's show so great. To Greg Bowes from Keating, Layla Pageman, we had Mike Kozlowski on, of course, Teo Horsdahl. All in all, a terrific show. Reminder, Dottotech is brought to you through the largesse of two great companies, London Drugs and MacStation. So if you have any computer needs, general computer needs, London Drugs are a great place to go. And of course, MacStation for all your Apple and Mac needs. And they are also have some wonderful courses that you can check out. Check them out at MacStation.com. Next week on the show, we've got lots of great stuff lined up. Oh, so good. I'm just tingling thinking about it. But you will have to wait to discover it next week. I'll see you here next time on Dottotech.